and to realize how different it is to visit the five towns and for hospitality as an outsider nowadays than it was in the time of Parshas Vayera. So Parshas Vayera, as we mentioned last week, introduces us to the whole theme of Chesed, and we segue from there directly into one of the most significant examples of Chesed, and it's fascinating just to see how extraordinary an example it is. And we have a special opportunity with this topic to pay close attention to the narrative of the Torah and to see what it teaches us. So we learn from Avram the quality of Hachnasas Orchim, of being able to welcome visitors. And that idea, as we mentioned last week, is particularly extraordinary because the visitors didn't actually need anything. And that this act that Avram did, extending himself in this way, was an act specifically of imitating God, of the halachta bedrachav. Even when there weren't human beings who needed help, what he did was develop his divine qualities, make sure that he was more godlike in who he was, in the way he treated people. And the fact that the Torah goes into the most detail out of all the chasadim of Avram, specifically about this act, is very noteworthy. And the Talmud has a statement which teaches us something, and what exactly it teaches we have to figure out. The Gemara says we can derive from Avram that Gidola Hachnasas Orchim Yoser Mehakbalos Pnei Hashchina, that welcoming guests is such a wonderful quality and such an important mitzvah, it's even greater than welcoming God himself. That's a statement in the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, which is source number 2. And it depends on a reading of the Psukim, which is discussed in a different Gemara. Source number 3, the Gemara Masechta Shavuos, notes that if you look at the progression here, there are actually two ways to read the Psukim. And if you look at the Psukim, are also cited here in section 1. So here, Avram is outside, and he's being visited by God, Vayera Lov Hashem. It's the first pasuk, second pasuk, Vayisana Vayar. He looks up and he sees Vine Shlosha Nashim Nitzavim. He sees three men. They weren't really men, but they look like men. Three men were approaching him. So what does he do? What does the third pasuk say? Vayomer Adonai Imna Matzah Sichein Benecha Al Nas Avor Me'alav Decha. So what does that mean? How do you translate that pasuk? It's a little bit ambiguous. How is it ambiguous? There's actually two different ways to read that pasuk, as the Gemara in Shavuos notes. And it's either Kodesh or Chol. That second word, Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud, is either holy or not holy. It's either referring to God or it isn't. So probably the more likely interpretation, one would have thought, is that it's not holy. Adonai is the plural of Adonim, say my masters. That's a non-holy pronunciation. So it seems like he's saying he sees these guests, these potential guests past him, and he says, my masters, listen, imna matzasi chein beinecha, if I have found favor in your eyes, al na tavor, don't pass, but stay here, be my guest. So that would be the normal way, perhaps, to read it, but the Gemara in Shavuos suggests that actually, no, this is Kodesh, and that Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud is the Shem Hashem, and what he's actually doing, it's a continuation from the previous interaction, God is with him, and he says, you know what, God, could you hold on a second? Imna matzasi chein beinecha, if you're happy with me, if you trust me, then al na tavor, God, wait here, I'm going to go take care of these guests. And that's a fascinating idea. So apparently he decided that it was worth interrupting that meeting with God in order to take care of the guests. And the Gemara tells us, we learn from Avram, that that's the proper behavior. But that itself prompts a question. We learn it from Avram. How did Avram know this? How did he decide that he could interrupt a meeting with God and say, God, thank you so much for coming, but could you wait a minute? I'm just going to take care of these apparently human people who weren't even human. So how did he decide that that was right? And this was a question that was discussed in the earlier Svarim. Not so long ago, the Noda Behuda, one of the great poskim in history, asked this question to a great Hasidic Rabbi, saying, can you explain to me, how did Avram himself know that this was the right thing to do? And in fact, I recently was speaking to a Talmid Chacham who thought that the clue in the verse to know that it was talking about God and not about Adonim, about these people, is the fact that here the trup isn't here, but in the Chumash, the trup has on the second, on the third pasuk here, Vayomar. So under that word, there's a pause. There's an asnachta, which means you pause and you stop there. So it's a strange place to put a pause. Here, this pasuk is about 11 psukim long, and a pause after the first word is a strange place to put the pause. And he suggests that it reflects hesitation. He's a little nervous. He's asking God, listen, you think it's okay with you, that maybe you'll wait here for a little while I take care of these people? So how did he know that that was the proper thing to do?
And there are a number of suggestions. Some point out that maybe that was the whole point. We discussed last week that Avram was miserable not having guests. He's there recovering from his milah, and he wants to still continue to do chesed. So God says, okay, you want guests? I'll send you guests. So if the guests showed up right then, maybe that's the point. He's supposed to interrupt and go take care of them. That's one possibility. Others suggest that it was just so ingrained at that point. He had trained himself in chesed in such a strong way that that pulls him away from God, whether he thought about it or not. The training just kicked in. But others point out, and perhaps this is the most powerful point, or Shach and others said it this way, that the whole message of chesed is to imitate God. So imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. If he's looking to show respect to God, and God presents him with an opportunity for chesed right in front of him, so then that's what he should do. Okay, he should go follow the chesed and pick up that plan. And God's chesed was being modeled at the moment in the context of Bikur Cholim. God was visiting him. But even specifically, Hachnasas Orchim was also something God had modeled with the creation of the world. Rav Soloveitchik had a whole drasha about that, about how God is the ultimate machnas oreach, that he provides a whole world that is here for us to live in, and that requires also, in Kabbalistic terms, tzimtzum. He has to contract himself, so to speak, to allow for us to inhabit this world, just as a host has to hold themselves back a little bit to make space for the guests who would come in. So all of that is displaying Hachnasas Orchim. So Avram understood, okay, if that's what's going on, if this is the opportunity, so imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, the biggest covet I could do is to go take care of these guests. So the Talmud has this statement, Gedol Hachnasas Orchim, Yoser Mehakbalos Pnei Hashchina. But what's fascinating is, it's not just a sentence of emphasis, but the Rambam actually brings this lahalacha. So the Rambam in Mishneh Torah, it's source 5. So the Rambam tells us that Gedola, it's the second line in source 5, the Gedola hachnasas orchem me'akbalus pnei ashchina, shenamar, ye'ra, v'yar, v'hinei shlosh anoshim, etc., etc. So the Rambam is a code of halacha. It's not an interpretation of Chumash, it's not a Musar Sefer either. So why is he bringing this as a practical point? What's the relevance of us? Do we expect that we'll be visited by God the next time we have guests that are planning to show up and we're going to have to interrupt that meeting? What does it mean practically for our purposes that the Rambam brings this as a matter of halacha? And there are a few suggestions that indeed it does have practical ramifications. In a broad sense, the Baal Shem Tov understood that sometimes people want to have guests for Shabbos, but on the other hand, they're thinking that if they have just their family, they'll have a much more spiritually elevated experience, because they'll be able to sing Zmiris and have Divrei Torah and talk about lofty things, and if they have guests, it's not going to be as inspiring, they're not going to be on the same level. He said maybe they'll even speak Lashon Hara, believe it or not. It's going to be a whole different atmosphere, so maybe it's a big trade-off to have the guests instead of having their meal by itself. So to that, the Besht says, that's what the Rambam is telling you, based on the Gemara, that this is actually more important than Hakbalos Pnei Hashchina. This is a higher priority. And others point out that there are also other practical ramifications we could think about. If somebody is on his way to a shir, or maybe even, as some Sfarim point out, if somebody is on the way to give a shir, but the guests show up that need to be taken care of, so then maybe that's what we're being told there, that this is a higher priority than going to a shir, then maybe even giving a shir. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach pointed out that even going to Tefillah B'Tzibur, if there are guests who show up, so then that becomes a higher priority to take care of them, to make sure that you're able to provide this dignity and provide this attention. Rav Schechter quotes in one of his Svarim, the name of Rav Soloveitchik, that he thought this was actually the source for a much broader principle. It's a question in general when we talk about this idea of Hachnasas Orchim taking priority over receiving the Shechina. So is that only about Hachnasas Orchim, or is this about Chesed as a whole? There are some who understand it's a concept of chesed as a whole. Overall, that takes a higher priority. But there are a lot of reasons and a lot of sources that put the emphasis specifically on Hachnasas Orchim, which seems to be a overwhelming kind of chesed. The other chesedim are a little bit more limited and a little bit more focused. And Hachnasas Orchim, which involves giving of your whole self and your house and really bringing somebody in, the language Hachnasa means absorption. You're bringing somebody in fully, you're taking care of them in all senses of the word. maybe this is more than a normal chesed. So Rav Shechter quoted from Rav Soloveitchik that there's a din in the Mishnah in Maseches Brachos, which is here as well. This is source number 6, that tells us that when you're saying Kriya Shema, so you're not allowed to interrupt. There's a rule of Hefsek, you can't interrupt in the middle of Kriya Shema, and there are different gradations of how serious it is, if you're in the middle of a paragraph, if you're in between the paragraphs, etc., etc. But nonetheless, the same Mishnah says that there are exceptions. So if somebody comes to you who needs to be greeted, so then you should greet them even in the middle of Kriya Shema. And there's a whole scale here. It depends if it's in between the paragraphs, if it's the middle of a paragraph, if they initiate, if you're initiating. So it's a whole complicated scheme. But what essentially emerges is that you'd interrupt Kriya Shema in order to greet people. So where do you get that from? So it's not clear from the Mishnah. The Mishnah doesn't tell us where it comes from. So Soloveitchik understood that that also comes from Avraham Avinu, that the principle that we see of Avram interrupting his meeting with God to take care of guests shows us that this is such a priority, that taking care of people is something that we have to give attention to even if we're in the middle of that kind of interaction, and that expresses itself in many different ways. And therefore, it's not just about this one example, but even other areas of halacha where you find that there's a priority given to people because they're in front of you, and even if you're in the middle of meeting with God, you still interrupt to do that. It's interesting how this fits into a broader concept, because we have a rule normally, Osteik v'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah, that when we're involved in any kind of mitzvah, even a lesser mitzvah, so presumably you're allowed to stay focused on that mitzvah and not interrupt for whatever else comes your way. It's an interesting question, this idea of meeting with God, is that a mitzvah, or is that just an opportunity you don't want to pass up? Is that an actual mitzvah? So the Nitziv in his commentary, which is brought here also, Nitziv in his commentary thought that this was the mitzvah of Avos Hashem, source number 4, that receive God's presence is a mitzvah of Avos Hashem. So yes, it's technically a mitzvah, but nonetheless, even though the rule normally is that we say, Osek a mitzvah, patam and a mitzvah, if you're involved in one mitzvah, you don't interrupt that mitzvah to do something else, apparently here this is an exception. And it's interesting because this is a discussion in Poskim in general from other sources, that even though normally you're allowed to stay focused on what you're doing and you're not expected to, maybe not even allowed to interrupt to do another mitzvah, but sometimes many poskim suggest that there's a whole difference between mitzvos ben adam l'makom and mitzvos ben adam l'chavero. That if the new mitzvah that presents itself is an interpersonal mitzvah, so many poskim thought that's a different rule, and that you do interrupt to take care of the human being. Why is that? Why should there be such a difference? So one way to understand it is the whole idea of Osek b'mitzvah, patam and a mitzvah is essentially an example of what we call onus rachmana patre, that you can't do what you can't do, you can't be everywhere at the same time. So therefore, if it's already impossible to be in the second mitzvah while you're doing the first mitzvah, so God understands, onus rachmana patre, God credits you with your desire to be in both places at the same time, so fine, he doesn't expect you to stop the first mitzvah to take care of the second mitzvah. But if the second mitzvah is a ben adam l'chavero, if the second mitzvah involves a human being, so he can't credit you with your intentions. If somebody is plotzing outside because they're starving and they need to be fed, and you're going to say, well, I'm involved in a mitzvah, so they'll say, okay, well, I'll give you credit for your good intentions. It doesn't work that way. God can give you credit for your good intentions, but human beings have actual physical needs, or at least we thought in this case, if they're not actually angels. So therefore, that becomes a priority, and that's maybe a principle in general when it comes to mitzvahs overall, which has many ramifications, comes up in a lot of areas. But this may be another example of this, that we give a priority to taking care of human beings, even in the context of a mitzvah. There was one commentary that added a thought to this, that we've applied this also to Torah study. So there's a discussion in the Gemara in Maseches Moed Katan. It says that normally, when it comes to Torah study, that is not a part of the general rule of Osek b'mitzvah, patam and a mitzvah. If somebody's involved in learning, so then they do have to interrupt the learning in order to take care of mitzvahs overall. However, there's an exception to that exception. And that is that if it's a mitzvah that somebody else will take care of, who's not in the middle of learning, so better to let them do that than you should keep learning. So how does that relate to the mitzvah of hospitality? So there was one commentary on the Sefer Hasidim, it's called the Milei de Chasidusa, where he suggested that this, by its very nature, is a mitzvah that can't be done by others. Because yes, maybe if there's a guest that needs to be taken care of, somebody else will take care of them, but they won't do it the way you would do it. And everybody has their own personal touch and their own unique ability to make a difference in how they take care of somebody. So therefore, he writes, you should treat this as a mitzvah she'efshir la'asos li'idei acherim. It can't be done by anyone else because there's doing it and there's doing it. There's doing it in a way that reflects what you can bring to this experience. And that's something that has its own quality to it that's going to override Torah study in general. So there's very, very powerful messages that are being conveyed from this idea, which seems more of a Musar kind of idea, but it has very practical halachic ramifications of saying that Hachnasas Orchim is even greater than Kabbalas Pnei Hashchina. So far, so good. Makes sense. So, seeing hi.
Hi. First of all, I heard probably many years ago that he was davening to Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But the Torah opens up by saying Vayera, that God appeared to him.
Whatever, but I
well, he was davening also. It's true. This is an experience. It's true that he's davening also, and it's true he's davening afterwards. So it's interwoven. That is correct.
Right. So, but I thought that the malachim were there to help him.
They were, and he didn't know that at the time, which is itself very interesting. Right, at first he thought they were guests, and we discussed last week.
It's in pain. It's
right.
In pain.
Yeah, we discussed last week that that's what's so striking about it. Right.
A glass of water, or
just on cue. Yeah. we're doing a lot of performance art this morning. Yeah. Now mention a steak. Yeah, sorry. So God was attending to him. The fact that God was visiting him means there's more license for him to interrupt.
No, he was davening, which is
a mitzvah.
I think would come first, and then.
Right.
You know, if the angels were sent to him like a doctor,
mm-hmm.
then they were taking care of him.
Right.
So I don't know how Moses Karkim comes into play.
So that's a part of the wonder of this whole thing. And we talked about this a little bit last week, that the fact that all of this happened in a roundabout way, that he thought he was actually taking care of visitors, which is what he asked for. That the Gemara, which also here, some of the last sources, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, tells us that God was visiting Avram as a chola and saying, how can I help you? What do you need? So he says, I'm miserable. I want to take care of people. There's nobody to take care of. And then these visitors show up, but they're not actually people. So it seems like it was a hoax. And that itself is really striking. So the way we explained it last week is that there's two components to chesed. There is the mitzvah of helping people, v'ahav t'l'arecha kamocha, but there's also even a broader theme here of imitating God, of a halachta bedrachav, and that was worth it, even if it was only an exercise, even if it was only a workout, but this helped develop his sense of kindness and compassion even more. Even though, at that point, so he didn't know that, he thought, okay, he was doing actual chesed. But all of that helps us to understand even more powerfully why this was worth doing. So, and yes, whether it was a tefillah or whether it was initiated by God, he's in the middle of the spiritual experience, and yet this apparently takes priority. And we find in halacha also that it's treated as a tzorech, that the idea of orchim overall is treated as a sense of urgency, as a shas adchak. It has a mitzvah status, and there are a number of sources in halacha that point out areas that are not necessarily as consequential as others, but that there are certain compromises in halacha that are allowed in order to take care of orchim. So you see, for example, in source number 8, so that's a source from Hilchos Shabbos. And now we're not talking about malachos here. We're not talking about actual violations of Shabbos. We're talking about something which is more in the category of tircha, something which is a great effort, and it's not really appropriate for Shabbos. So we're talking about cleaning out the otsar, cleaning out a tefua, otsar of tefua, which is not something you would normally do on Shabbos. So cleaning out, let's say you have a storehouse. So an otsar is a storehouse, and tefua, yes. So it's here at source number 8. So otsar shel tefua. Oh, kadeyayin, or maybe you have barrels of wine. Mm-hmm. So to clean this out, to make space in the house, is not really such a Shabbistic thing. It's not an actual balacha, but it's not the kind of thing we would normally encourage you to do on Shabbos. It's considered to be a tircha. And here it says in Shulchan Aruch that if l'dvar mitzvah, the second line here, that for a purpose of a mitzvah you're allowed to anyway, kigon shepineyu lachnasas orchim, that let's say you have to clean the space because you have guests, so you have to host them, you have to make space, you're allowed to do that. And there are a few other compromises we find in certain areas of halacha that reflect the fact that this is a mitzvah that is recognized as such, and therefore it's given special consideration. So in that context, there's a discussion what exactly it is that justifies that. How exactly is it that we're able to override certain halachic principles for the purpose of Orchim? So some understand, there was the tshuva about this in the Tzitz Eliezer, a great post-taker passed away about 20 years ago. He wrote that, presumably, in the context of Shabbos, it's because this is a part of Oneg Shabbos. Oneg Shabbos, we have an obligation to make Shabbos pleasant, and that includes for the visitors also. So therefore, that overrides other things that would have compromised our Oneg Shabbos. The idea that we're exerting ourselves in a way that otherwise would be contradictory, but here it's for the purpose of Oneg Shabbos, and so that should allow it. But there was a later author who took issue with that, who disagreed with the Tzitz Eliezer on this. His name is Rav Sternhill from Baltimore, and he has an essay where he says, it's not just that. Yes, it's Oneg Shabbos, but there's something more fundamental here. It's Kavod HaBrios. This is human dignity, which is a principle which is broader and is not just limited to Shabbos and extends throughout. And that goes to a very fundamental question here as to how exactly do we understand the nature of this mitzvah. And we mentioned last week that Chesed breaks down into two tracks. One is what we would normally call nowadays Staka, and the other one is what we call more generally chesed. The Gemara uses the language in Maseches Sukkah, chesed shebegufo, the chesed you do with your body, with your time, with your attention, with service, and chesed shebamono, the chesed that you do with your resources, with providing assistance. So what category is hachnasas orchem? What would you say? Is it financial assistance?
Both.
It's both. So that's the idea. It seems to have both here, because you're certainly helping out people who are in need. Very often that's the case. So it would be straight out staka. There's no question if there's a person in need of a meal, and you host them in your house, and you give them food to eat. So for sure, that's a fulfillment of staka in the fullest way. But it's also a type of personal chesed, which is separate and apart from staka, and has its own kiyum. And there were those who said that hachnasas orchim really should be looked at as a whole different category. If you have people who are needy, for sure that's staka, but the people who are not needy, that's its own mitzvah, because the social bonding is itself a mitzvah. That's an idea that was written in the Sefer of the Maral's brother, Rabbi Bezalel of Prague, who wrote a Sefer called Sefer HaChaim, where he makes this point that it's specifically about the personal relationships, even separate and apart from those who are in need. And there's a point that Maharil made as well. We have that in the sources here. So that provokes a discussion of how exactly do we classify Oreach when we say that there are dispensations that are allowed for the need of Orchim. So what exactly does it mean, Oreach? So if I have my next door neighbor over for lunch on Shabbos, is that in that category? Is that called Oreach? Or do we mean specifically somebody who's poor, or somebody who is dislocated? If you're dislocated, so that also gives you a status of being temporarily poor. It's a Mishnah in Peah, which is actually here as well, that source number 12. So talking about somebody who is maybe very wealthy, but they're not at home at the time, and they're traveling somewhere far away. So the last line here is, Ani haya ba'osa hasha. At that time, at that moment, when you're not at home, you're considered to be an ani. You're considered to be without resources. So is that a specifically different category? So here, there's an interesting discussion, because the comment we saw before, the Shulchan Aruch source in source 8, where it says that you can compromise on Hilchos Shabbos for the sake of Orchim, so the Rama, whose comment is at the end here, he seems to limit it. So he has a line here, this is now on the top of the next page, right before source 9, so the Rama adds, this is three lines from the bottom, V'lo mikri orchim, we don't call them guests, elish nes archu eitzlo bebeso. We're talking about people you're hosting in your house. They're not just coming over for a meal, you're putting them up because they need lodging. So they're staying in your house. Or, maybe there are people who are being put up by your neighbor's house, but they need a meal, so they come to you for a meal because they're coming in the neighborhood. But one way or another, they're people who need attention. But if we're talking about just neighbors, he goes on to say, Aval kishizimein chaver l'sodetzlo, you asked your friend to come over, have a meal at your house, lo mikri orchim, that's not called orchim, v'eino sudas mitzvah rak sudas rishos. So that's not called a sudas mitzvah, it's only called a voluntary suda. So on the surface, that sounds like we're only focusing on the tzedakah component, and that if there isn't a charitable aspect to it, it's not called orchim. However, There's a big however. So many dispute this, and many point out that, first of all, he doesn't mean just for the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim. Hachnasas Orchim certainly does involve broader categories. He's talking specifically in this context where we're compromising on Hilchos Shabbos, so that the compromise should be only for people who really need it. But is there a mitzvah involved in having people just to show them attention and to show them dignity, even if they don't necessarily need the food, and to bring a closer bond of friendship? Is that a mitzvah? Most right, yes, it absolutely is a mitzvah. And the Ramah is only talking about compromising in Hilchos Shabbos. And then they also point out that even for your next door neighbor, who you want to bond with more, once they're invited and you see you need more space, it's also permissible to make these compromises in Hilchos Shabbos. And there are those who just straight out disagree with the Ramah. So that's a source here also. The Pesachei Tshuva is a commentary on your day, a source 13, where he brings a lot of later sources, and he quotes here from the Solus L'Mincha and from others. The last line he says that V'huzal quotes the Sefer Solus L'Mincha Cholik Alav. He disagrees with the Ramah in his limitation. That this is source 13. He's saying that normally, okay, maybe you shouldn't invite your next door neighbor if you know it's going to force you to compromise in Hilchos Shabbos and it's going to put you in that situation. But once they're there, it's certainly justified and it's certainly a mitzvah, and we shouldn't necessarily see this limitation at all. So what seems to emerge clearly is that there's a huge tzedakah component, and that's taken very seriously, but that shouldn't be seen as excluding the aspect of social bonding and showing attention to people who need friendship and strengthening your own bonds of friendship. All of that is also a mitzvah, and both of them have a place. I'm sorry.
I just had a question about when you say compromising Hilchos Shabbos. Like, yeah. What does it really entail? I mean, you can't just go out and like...
You can't do malacha.
Right.
Yeah. So the context here is talking about tircha, the things that are effort. And it's not really Shabbos dick. So it's to do a malacha, that we're still not going to let you do. But if it's something that you normally wouldn't say is appropriate for Shabbos, you're cleaning out this whole room, you're moving around the bottles of wine that would normally be quite an exertion, it wouldn't be appropriate for Shabbos, but for the sake of this mitzvah, for the sake of Hachnasas Orchim, you can do it. And so what emerges is, the Ramah says, well, only do that for Orchim who really need it, who are either poor all the time or dislocated. And others are saying, yeah, not necessarily, even when it's not that. Maybe ideally you'd have it prepared before Shabbos, but the value of having guests is itself something we acknowledge, even if they're not necessarily poor. Hi. Terrible question. There's no terrible question.
I love number 13 out of whatever.
Yeah.
It's great. I love what you're doing today.
So, okay.
Yeah. What are these simple ladies supposed to do in daily Shabbat life? I mean, he says, A says this, B says that.
Right.
C says this. Do we make them pick and choose?
No. So what emerges is that we certainly should have guests. We should have guests of all types. We should have guests who are needy and guests who are versatile. And if there's a need to clean out a space, so ideally we'll do that before Shabbos. But the fact is that if you can't, then you do it anyway. Clean out the space on Shabbos, right? Which seems everyone agrees to. But that highlights the aspect of a mitzvah. But I'll tell you something else about practice that was a source of interest to me. So when I was a child, so I remember hearing my father say, always, we weren't the biggest singers, not the biggest chazanim in my family, but I remember my father saying occasionally on a Friday night that he would quote the Chafetz Chaim, that the Chafetz Chaim said that maybe you should push Shalom Aleichem off to later, if at all, or push it off, not sing it then, because he would say, Shalom Aleichem is for the angels, and the angels, ironically for the story, the angels don't get hungry. The people are hungry, so better we should go right to the meal and not sing Shalom Aleichem. So I have memories of my father's Zichron Levracha quoting this from the Chafetz Chaim. And then later on, I got to research a little bit the topic of Hachnasas Orchim. I saw it in many places. I saw it cited many times that the Chafetz Chaim had said something of this sort, that indeed it's recorded in quite a few places, that he did make a comment of this nature, that one should dispense with or delay Shalom Aleichem because the angels are not as hungry as the people. But what's fascinating is that there is a slight difference of opinion as to what the context was. And of the many sources that quote the Chafetz Chaim on this point, there's one especially that talks about it in a halachic nature. And he thought that the Chafetz Chaim meant this specifically if you have poor people at the table, if you have needy people at the table, and there's a tzedakah component, so then that puts a different sense of urgency to it. And there's a discussion, building off of this comment to the Chafetz Chaim, that maybe there's actually an isser involved. So what would that be? So here, this is a source later on, source 16, that tells us there's a prohibition of bal ta'acher. Bal ta'acher means do not delay. Bal is Aramaic, means lo sa'acher, do not delay. And here in the Torah, it's referring to korbanos. If you dedicate something to the Beis HaMikdash, so you shouldn't delay in giving it, you should give it right away. Now, what does right away mean? So it turns out that really means basically you have a year, you have three regalim. That's the message of this source, Pasuk 16. However, what emerges from the Talmud is that the same concept of not delaying doesn't only apply to the Beis HaMikdash, but it applies to tzedakah as well. So if you make a commitment to tzedakah, so you have to be very prompt in paying that and not delay. And that actually is stricter, because you don't have three yom tovim to wait. But if there are poor people waiting, what the Gemara calls kaimi aniyim, there are people who are waiting to get the money, so they get the assistance, so then it becomes urgent right now, so you shouldn't delay at all. So there are some who suggest that that's what the Chafetz Chaim meant. That if you have people at your table who are in need of the meal, people who are aniyim, so to keep them waiting while you sing to the angels, he thought that was inappropriate, and maybe that's a violation of this Torah prohibition. Maybe that's against the sister of Baal Ta'acher. So that was a discussion of itself. Vasher Weiss, and that was a well-known name in this community, Vasher Weiss has a sefer on Zmiros where he talks about this. And as a matter of historical record, he also relates that he met someone who was an older person who had been at the table of the Chafetz Chaim, and remembers as well the Chafetz Chaim saying this was his policy to not sing Shalom Aleichem while the people were there. And he discusses the question practically, is it really an Isser Daraisa to have the guests wait till you sing Shalom Aleichem? Are you really violating this pasuk? So he thought no. He thought that was a little bit of an overstatement. The people on understand that even if people are needy and they're hungry, they still understand there's a process. Okay, you'll come in, you'll sit down a little bit, you'll sing a little bit, and then we're serving. Doesn't mean literally you have to give it to them the first second they enter the door, otherwise it's going to be a terrible oppression. So he thought to say that was literally bal ta'acher, that was a little bit much. That even if there's an idea not to keep people waiting, he didn't think it was a violation of this actual specific Torah prohibition. But what's interesting is, there's another situation where maybe it's a little bit more serious. That in the laws of Sukkot, the same Chafetz Chaim, the author of the Mishnah Berurah, so he discusses in that context that there's a whole complicated situation. You always hear the announcements the first day of Sukkot, that the first night of Sukkot is complicated. And normally, if it's raining, we don't sit in the Sukkah. But the first night of Sukkot, there's an extra obligation to eat in the Sukkah, and it may apply even if it is raining. So there's a whole discussion what to do. And the Mishnah Berurah in general was particularly machmir about this. He was particularly stringent. And he said that if it's raining the first night, any other night of Sukkot, later in Sukkot, you just go into the house if it's raining. But the first night, second night also, if it's raining, you should wait. And you should see if you can wait it out, see if it's going to stop raining. And he actually says, give it a few hours. Go into your house for a few hours and see how long you can hold out. Maybe it'll stop raining and you'll be able to eat in the Sukkah. But the Chafetz Chaim says, if you have needy guests at your Sukkah, or you have needy guests who expect to eat in the Sukkah, and they're waiting, then don't wait at all. So then, serve them right away. So this whole idea that he says the mitzvah of sukkah requires you to wait and to not start your meal, that's only if there aren't guests there. If there are guests, especially if there are needy guests, then you have to start right away. And this might be different than what Rav Asher Weiss discusses. Because it's one thing to say you have somebody over on a Friday night, the fact that they need to wait a few more minutes while you sing Shalom Aleichem, that's not really considered oppressive. That's not considered violating the commitment to take care of them. But if they come the first night of Sukkot and you say, I'm just going to wait 5 hours, maybe it'll stop raining, that actually does impose a burden on the people who are waiting. And that itself is something to factor in. Maybe that does actually make a difference. It's interesting, when you talk specifically about Sukkah and the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim, so there's a story that's also brought in a number of Svarim, of Reb Chaim Moser Krasinski, who was a contemporary of the Chafetz Chaim, and much of a colleague of his, was known as one of the great Gaonim of Europe, passed away in 1940. And there was a story that was related that he had a guest on Sukkot, but at the time Reb Chaim Moser was sick. So a chola is exempt from sitting in the sukkah. So he wasn't sitting in the sukkah himself, but his guest wasn't sick, so he needed to eat in the sukkah, so his guest was eating in the sukkah. And then in the middle of the meal, Reb Chaim Ozer shows up. And the guest said, well, what's going on? I thought the Rebbe was sick. I thought he was not going to be eating in the sukkah. So Reb Chaim Ozer explained, yeah, a chola is pater from sukkah. He's not pater from machnasas orchim. So if he were alone, I would stay upstairs. But I have a guest here, which is really evocative of Rav Avinu, getting up out of his sickbed. Do we have any more minutes? Or we? Okay, so there are a few other interesting points that emerge from here. So what I'd like to do, depending on however many minutes I have, so if you know, again, my apologies for that, but if you look at, this is a topic which really we could spill over into next week, because there's so much to consider, 5 minutes. Okay, so I'll tell you, so if we spill this over into next week, maybe this is the best way. I'll mention something else, but what's really fascinating to consider for next week is that the Chafetz Chaim, again, to mention him for a third time from a different Sefer, 2 weeks, okay. So, sounds good. So, the Chafetz Chaim, we've mentioned him in a couple of contexts. The first we were mentioning, we call him Pi HaShmua, just what's being said in his name, and that indeed seems to be backed up. Then we mentioned the Mishnah Berurah, was his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, and where he talks about the laws of Sukkot. He also wrote another, he wrote many Sfarim, but he also wrote a Sefer, a very, very important Sefer, highly recommended, called Avas Chesed. So, Avas Chesed, he talks at length about all the concepts of Chesed, and he makes the point that there is a whole derivation you can have, a whole lesson you can take of looking at the psukim, which is why I reproduced them all here in source number one. If you look carefully at the psukim, the fact that the Torah goes into such detail about what ended up being an exercise wasn't even a real chesed. The Torah does that because each word is teaching us something. And he started the ball rolling with his comments in the Sefer Avos Chesed. In 100 years since then, a lot of other Sfarim took up the whole mantle of interpreting what these Psukim tell us to teach us about Hachnasas Orchim. So that deserves a little more time, so maybe we'll come back to that, and we'll just skip to the end of the visit here. So at the very end, what's also super fascinating is that Avram continues to take care of them, and he escorts them out. And that is a part of the mitzvah, and also a separate mitzvah. That the idea we call levaya, that you escort, unfortunately it's the same word that's used for a funeral, because it means the same thing, you escort the mates, but it's a whole different context. But the idea that you escort the guest out is considered to be a particular part of the mitzvah, and it's really fascinating that the Rambam makes a very big deal out of this. And the Rambam says that, in source number 5, the Rambam says, Hilchos Avil, Perek Yudal, source 5, Schar Halavaya, the reward for escorting the guest, after, says source 5. This one, it's another Rambam. There's a few Rambams here. So this one is source 5. Yes, but here on the second page, the middle of the second page. It says, Schar Halavaya, Meruba Min Hakol, the reward for escorting the guest, that's more than everything. Apparently that's more than the hospitality itself. This is a rule, a policy that Avraham Avinu instituted. And this is a part of the chesed that he conducted. So Michael over Idrachim, Mashko-san, so he would bring in guests and he would feed them, and he would give them what to drink, Umalavo-san, and he would also escort them out. And then he goes on to say the idea we mentioned before about Gedol Achnasorchem Ekbalos Pnei Hashchina. And then, after recording that line, we mentioned before, Levayam Yoser Machnas Aslam. Escorting them is even greater than bringing them in the first place. So, what is going on with that? Why should this be more significant than the hospitality itself? And there are many suggestions. Some suggest that here's where you show that you really care. So, if somebody is starving and needs to be fed, okay, what can I do? I can't let them starve, so I have to give them my food. But the fact that even after you have fed them, you escort them out graciously, so then you are showing that you actually care about them as people, and that reflects back on the whole experience. That shows what was really going on, and that gives a whole level of meaning that wouldn't have been there without that. Now, what's really fascinating to think about is that we learned this from Avraham Avinu, and the Torah tells us that that's what happened. But by that point, he for sure knew they were angels already. And so maybe he didn't know before when he welcomed them in. He thought they were hungry, but at this point, they've told him he's going to have a son. They told him that Sdom was going to be destroyed. he for sure caught on by that point, even though the commentary struggled with this because it seems a little bit difficult to figure out what's going on. So presumably he did understand that they were angels, and yet he continued to model the whole experience. And this whole idea of escorting guests has become a part of this mitzvah in a core way, even though it's also separate. So we'll have other sources that point out that levaya could apply even without hospitality. Because if you see somebody wandering around in the street because they're not from the neighborhood, so to walk with them and escort them is its own mitzvah. And there also are references that Avraham's grandson Yaakov, who ends up wrestling with an angel, a more negative experience with an angel, and he gets injured, and we're not allowed to eat the Gid Hanasha because of the injury that he had in that corresponding part of the body. So some of the commentaries, they're right, the Chizkuni, others right, the Rashbam, that's a punishment for the children of Yaakov, the Bnei Yisrael. Why? Because they let him walk around outside alone. There's a mitzvah of levaya. You have to escort people who are outside alone. You have to make sure that they are not by themselves. So we fail to do that. So we pay the price. You can't have that fancy piece of meat. You can't have the Gid Hanasha because we fail to do that mitzvah of levaya separate and apart from the hospitality. But certainly it does integrate into hospitality. Nowadays people aren't as careful. It's a whole discussion why not. Some suggest that it was there for protection. And nowadays people are safer outside, let's hope. Where the light, it's a little bit of an arguable point. Some actually say it the opposite way, but it's all a little bit subjective. But ideally, there are streetlights, and there are street signs, and there are maps, and there are trains that make things a little bit safer. Maybe, who knows? But that's one of the suggestions. But the Sfarim emphasizes there's two components. There's protection, making sure people who may not be in the neighborhood, may not know how to get around, have somebody watching them. And also to show dignity, to show that you care about them, to show this wasn't just about, well, what can I do? You were starving, I had to give you something to eat, but I care about you as a person, and therefore I'm going to maintain that attention until the very last moment. So many fascinating things. Again, I thank you so much for your tolerance, and there's a lot more to explore about what these psukim teach us about the mitzvah.
Thank you, Rabbi Feldman.
Thank you.